Okay. Well,
hello
to our large crowd here today. I'm happy to introduce the last of the religion and film seminars, which finally comes back to Hinduism. And we have Jessica Hines, who is an author who's written extensively on Indian cinema. Her book entitled...
Looking for the Big B, my... No, I've changed the title. Looking for the Big B, Bollywood, Bachchan and Me.
Wow, wonderful. Is out, is soon to come out?
No, March 2007.
Is out March 2007. Jessica's lived and worked and studied in Bombay on Indian cinema. Long history. And you've been the biographer of Amitabh Bachchan himself and a personal friend. And today she's going to talk about religion in the films of Amitabh Bachchan, Shouting at Shiva.
Thank you very much. So I don't know how much you know about Amitabh Bachchan, but basically he's God in Indian cinema. He has been for the last 30 years. He was born to quite high caste parents. His father was a very famous Hindu poet in the romantic tradition, and got this massive following. And his pen name was Bachcha, or child, and so when Amitabh was very young, and they put him into a new school, and he had to choose which name he was going to have, whether it's going to be the actual surname of Rai or whether it's going to be Bachchan. And so they chose Bachchan because they wanted to have the quality of the child and to be open to new possibilities, and that's what they want everyone in the family to have. So his name, Amitabh, means everlasting light. It's the name of his documentary. He's quite a remarkable man. He went to school in Sherwood, which is a big hill station school, and then went to university. He was not very academic, to be honest, and then went to, finally at 27 or 25, got a job as a shipping clerk in Calcutta. But he'd always acted all the way through school, all the way through university, and then when he was in Calcutta, he joined up with the Calcutta Players, who were this very cool bunch of people in Calcutta. His brother was totally the opposite person. He was very very focused, very, you know, he managed to sort of breeze through his exams and just be, you know, very cool and stuff. And everything that Amitabh had struggled at, he was very focused. And he decided that what Amitabh needed to do was to go and join films. So he took photographs of Amitabh, sent them around to all these different people, and they're really awkward photographs. He's sort of sitting in the park, and managed to get him this part in a very small film written by and directed by K.A. Abbas, who is was one of the people that wrote Raj Kapoor's films. I don't know if you know him, but he's a very big director in the 50s. So Amitabh joined films and was not very successful. And then in 1973, he had a film called Zanjeer, meaning the chain, and where he played this sort of rebel policeman. He joined forces with the scriptwriters of that film, Saleem Javed, and they sort of formed this trio, created this phenomenon called the Angry Young Man. And by this time he was in his 30s, but he was still seen as the Angry Young Man. Now, the thing about the Angry Young Man is that he has issues. He has many issues. One of them is with traditional forms of religion, and he often has a very troubled relationship with whatever the authority or the godhead is in the films. The classic one is in Divar, which ricocheted him into superstar status in 1975, which is what I'm going to show you first, if I can make it all work. So, I think if we turn out the light, I'm going to be able to do this in the dark. Mm-hmm. Okay. Oops. That's good.
Right, yeah, cheers.
There is. There we go. Now this shot is just setting up at the beginning of the film.
Can you see?
Him this is his first entry into the film. This isn't him, this is Shashi Kapoor, is as someone who will not enter the temple. In those separate directions. Now I'll get to the next clip, which is where his mother's ill, so he decides that what he has to do is he has to go and talk to Shiva. He does it in an inimitable way. Okay, next. Very good film, if you haven't seen it. It's one of the best gangster films. So he can't get into the hospital, and so what he's saying is that he's going to have to go to the temple. Do I speak Hindi?
No.
Okay, I'll translate for you. He's the gang boss now. You can tell by the dark shirt and the shades and his amazing wee van. Come on. The temple. Now this is a key scene in Hindi cinema. This is where you stay. Today. Look, until now I've never been in the
जिस पर जम गए तो उसकी पूजा
बढ़ी जो जिंदगी भर जाती रही लेकिन तुम्हारे मंदिर में दीप जलाती रही बहुत आज She's lying in a hospital. And where are you? Are you doing this because she's my mother and you're going to be cross at me? And her mother kept the faith. She never gave up faith. Now it's up to you. Don't let my mother die. Give my mother back to me. She listens. Okay.
So how did Amitav now is a god. And he is literally a god. There is a temple to him in Calcutta that was set up in 2001 and where people go in and they chant lines from his films and they do speeches. And I mean, it's quite easy to lampoon the idea of someone going, "Om, I can work English, I can talk English, because Om, English is a penny language." But actually, you know, whether he say he think he's a god or not is quite hazy. And they say anyone who's had this much impact on someone's lives, how can he be nothing less than a god? Which proves nothing other than goalposts are meant to be moved, and to do so is a fan's unique prerogative. So how has this come? How has he become a god from being the angry young man who shouted at Shiva? I think there's a couple of reasons. The first one being he stopped talking to the press in 1975, at the same time as he became the biggest thing since the Cedars watermelon. He fell out with all the gossip press and all the newspapers during the emergency. They blamed him and his close relationship with the Gandhi family on the sudden restrictions on the gossip press. And so they banned him, and he in turn banned them, and they didn't talk to each other for sort of 7 years. And so at the time when he was literally having 8 films running simultaneously in cinemas in Bombay, all house full, as they say, it sold out, all the screenings, he wasn't talking. So as I'm sure you know from different religious movements, if the guru goes into silence, then you can, as the devotee, you can project what the hell you want onto him. You know, he is your guru. He's your Amitabh Bachchan. You know, he means to someone, Vijay and Divar. To someone else, he is Anthony and Amarak by Anthony. To someone else, he's the lover in Kavi Kavi and so whatever. So that there's that thing of this intense fan. And star relationship, which is unlike any other in the history of film, as far as I can make out. And then just at the point where he was starting to talk to, he did a big interview with the Times of India, just at the point where he had an accident on the set of one of his films. I don't know if you know about it, but in 1982 he was filming for Cooley, which is this film by one of the great practitioners of absurdist cinema, Manmohan Desai, and he got punched by the baddie. He was there having a fight, and he got punched, and the baddie collapsed onto a table, and he collapsed onto the edge of a table and rolled over and stood up and sort of then doubled up in pain. And Desai tapped him and said, "Fantastic acting." And
he was like, actually, no, I can't move. And then they sent him home, and the next morning he was sort of screaming in agony, and they took him to the hospital, and nobody could see anything wrong. They'd had these x-rays, but they couldn't find anything wrong. And it was a real, that thing of, like, you know, when apparently when Indira Gandhi came into hospital, shot up from her, mm-hmm. her sequel bodyguards, there was a sort of paralysis amongst the staff of, like, someone famous coming in and this kind of, I don't know what to do, something, you know. Yeah. So anyway, it was like sort of Emperor's New Clothes. Nobody could see anything wrong with Bachchan because he was indestructible. Mm-hmm. By this time, he was taking on some 11 men in a fight, I think. And so he then went into this series of different operations. They shipped him back to Bombay. They took apart a plane to carry him in. You know, then they took him to Breach County Hospital, and the fans went. But the whole country went mad. Really, there's one guy who promised to his local god that if Amitabh survived, then he would run backwards 800 kilometres from Baroda to Mumbai, and then run backwards. You know, and Amitabh found out about this and met him at the temple, and, you know, people were giving, you know, women, old women were sleeping on the floor and giving up their khana and stuff to be able to have Amit live. There were big communal prayer, you know, sort of Muslims and Hindus praying together for his life, and one film director told me that he came out of his house and this small homeless boy came up to him and said, "Sir, you know, if any of my limbs or organs will help Amitji, you know, take them." He's like, "You're seven." But anyway, so it was kind of that kind of intensity of feeling. And it went on for a long time. It went on for several weeks. It's this kind of building drama of, you know, and different vital organs would pack up. And then at one point he died. He completely died. And then his wife was looking through the window of the ICU and she saw his toe moving. And she screamed, "His toe, it moves." And everyone descended again and he came back to life. So this idea that actually... And then when the Kuli was finally released, they froze the film at the frame where Amitabh was injured and said, "This is the shot where Amitabh was injured." And then at the end, he was supposed to die, but he actually survives several bullets to the chest with the theory that who God protects, no one can kill. And from that point on, you know, more bullets than were used in the entire shootouts of the OK Corral were wasted upon Amitabh's body, and, you know, he couldn't die. And so the people's relationship with him changed dramatically, and people started to arrive at his house for darshan, which, mm-hmm. you know, the idea of the liquid gaze, and that people, gods have a sacred sight, and you go to them and mm-hmm. you get their sight, and it's a very physical exchange. Well, you know, special people have special sight too. So people wait outside, mm-hmm. like big dirty snowdrifts of men in white wait outside his house each day to receive his darshan. So this happened, and then he kind of went into a period of decline, because, I mean, that's, you know, he is a god. I mean, he isn't a god. That Freudian. He isn't a god, but so people then have to make him fail, and he did fail quite spectacularly. He went into politics, and that was a disaster, and then he set up a company, and that was an even bigger disaster. But he pulled through it all and has changed again in the public eye to being somehow, he's a survivor. He's got a story that's one of great hardship and triumph over the odds, which, you know, in a country like India is very powerful. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, during, you know, obviously during the 90s, there was the rise of Hindutva, which is many things, but which in some sense has created the idea of a global Hindu community, which wasn't there previously, as we were just talking about, that there's sort of individual pockets of, you know, you can believe anything and still be Hindu, and there are also different sort of clans within the religion, but the Hindutva, and also, it has to be said, the realization within the film industry that the overseas market, the diaspora market, was huge, has created in the cinema this this kind of neo-traditional pan Indian family, which is very Hindu, and the the patriarch of which has become Amitabh Bachchan, and he somehow now in his movies, I mean, he still plays the odd gangster, but in his movies he is definitely the wise, benign father figure. And so if we dare, I'm going to try and see another couple of clips where we can see him being old Amitabh. Okay, now he's now 64. I think I last checked. He was born in 42. 11th of October. This kid's with the school. Mahabadi.
Oh, I've been trying to see this one.
Next one. This is showing him as head of family. Songs in Hindi films have quite a lot of storylines going through them. This is Kavi Khushi Kavi Gum. This is Jaya Bachchan, who's his wife in real life. Of the overseas sun. Common theme, yeah. because there's such an idea of what India should be abroad. Mm. I mean, within India as well, there's kind of neo-traditionalism amongst the press and the heroines. It's a real force in some ways, especially with directors like Karan Johar. There's a real, been a real move over the last 10 years to shoot lots of stuff in England. Shock. She can sense the sun's rise.
Yeah.
I mean, she could actually hear the helicopter. Have to train to do. Here we go. Oh, different way, so. Thing that happened is that the other thing that happened is in 1999 or 2000. In 2000, suddenly there was this kind of amazing outpouring of love across the world for Amitabh. There was an online poll at the BBC about who was the best actor or entertainer, and they had people like Laurence Olivier. Marlon Brando and stuff, and to their amazement and surprise, the person who came out of everyone else was Amitabh Bachchan, who most people at the BBC hadn't heard of. But it was sort of just showing what the web can do, and also the fact that it was real kind of, I mean, to be fair, I had no idea that this poll was there, and it was a real sort of, you know, Desi power in action, and everyone sort of saying this is Amitabh must come first and stuff. And so they all logged on and emailed everyone going, log on and vote Amitabh. And so he got honoured by the BBC of being the entertainer of the century, much to everyone's joy. And then he got initiated into Madame Tussauds. And then he had made this remarkable decision to become the host of KBC, Kaumbhnagar Crorepati, which is the Indian version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Yeah.
And I thought that this was the worst idea ever. And a lot of other people didn't think it was a very good idea, but he did it. And he made the most tremendous success of it. Mm-hmm. And people absolutely loved it. And for the first couple of days, he was quite awkward in his role. But then, I mean, I do have a bit. I'm not going to go into that. Try to find it. It's too harshly. But he also started to put in at the beginning of the show little vignettes about life and how you should live your life, and little kind of, you know, was it called chicken soup for the soul? That kind of real cod philosophy, you know. When you are in a boat and it's filling up with water, you know, don't try and paddle, you know, that sort of thing. And after a while, I mean, it was a massive, huge success, this game show. And a couple of weeks after they started, he went to Tirupati, which is a temple in South India, and he found that when people, crowds are calling to him, they will call the names of people that they loved in his film. So they'll go, you know, hey, Anthony Bai, or, you know, Sakarji, or, you know, whatever. And when he got out, when the crowds were surrounding him in Tirupati, they were shouting, hey, KBC, KBC. So everyone was like, oh, my God, the reach of this is even South India, and it's just because it was one star, so it was global and it was massive. And he became, and they had to change cinema times because they found that people were not going to the 9 o'clock shows; they were staying in and watching Amateur. And he became kind of the font of all knowledge and wealth, but also a celebration of the India's middle class's devotion to education as a means of getting ahead. And then there'd be people that have been like so obviously focused on their studies that they knew nothing outside of their own area, and there would be moments where he would say, what was the name of Basanti's horse in Sholay? And then everyone would go, because it's a really obvious film question. And the contestant would go, and he would be like, because Sholay is one of his big films, so there would be kind of a hushed silence in the audience. How would he take it that he didn't know that the Basanti's horse's name was Dhanu and stuff? And he was obviously very kind. And then there was the thing was when he'd have the phone a friend, it would always be like someone's mum, and they'd all be sitting around the edge and going, they'd be like, auntie, is someone a button on the phone? And he'd have to say hello to everyone in the family. Well, you know, well, that's a terrified contestant could actually get the good question. That really sort of shot him back up to being king of the hill, along with these patriarch roles. And I think that what he started, these little vignettes at the beginning, became the moment where he said that after a while the station realised that people were tuning in just to get Amitabh Ji saying his little guru bit, and then they'd switch off. So it was almost like tuning in to have a kind of little preach, and then they'd switch off. And he said that the change was remarkable when, because as you know, when you're being respectful to elders, you touch their feet, and he said that the change happened when he realised that older people were coming up to him and trying to touch his feet, which you only do with your guru. And he was like, he said to me in Geneva a couple of years ago, I could set up under a tree tomorrow and, you know, I'd have a massive following. It's just rubbish, he said. But they did publish a book of his sayings, which people love. And so all of this culminated in the temple at in Calcutta, where they have... They do a lot of good, though. They do a lot of good in his name. So he is now a god, which he says, how am I supposed to stop it? So it's quite a remarkable trajectory. I don't know whether James Dean would have ended up a god, but it is.
In his lifetime as well.
Yeah. It's not after his death. There's been no kind of mythification after his death. It's all within, as you say, within his lifetime. So there we go.
It's got icons to him.
It's got pictures everywhere. He's got soundtracks from his film playing. The priests will give speeches, you know, or sermons based on his characters in his films, and it's quite a phenomenon. I don't know that happening anywhere else. I mean, there's always people always saying, oh yeah, you go into a home in India, there's the gods and there's the film stars, but everyone's very aware which are the gods and which are the film stars. It's this sort of myth, everyone's all mushed and all up together, but there is just some one very devoted fan group.
I taught a class in Harrow the other day, and the class was about who was it about? It was Jalaram Bapa and Sai Baba Shirdi and Satya Sai Baba. But very quickly the conversation went on to, so which ones are God and which ones are not? Mm-hmm. And it was very complicated, and somebody would say, well, I think he's God. Well, I don't think so. But we pray to him, yeah, but not as a God. You know, huge sort of debate. But partly, it was hard because it became clear that it was very easy to become a God at some level. But it wasn't completely arbitrary. There were certain rules you had to fulfil along the way.
A couple of miracles help.
Yeah.
Has he got any miracles?
Well, it came back from
the dead.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
Yes. As it goes.
A bit Christian, but yeah, from
exactly.
that. Yeah.
He came back from the dead. He came back from financial ruin. Yeah. Another fair miracle.
Yeah.
And he's managed to maintain his love of the people.
It's funny because some of it sounds like deep Hinduism.
Mm.
The sort of thing that gets happening. You know, we just saw Rama and Sita and Lakshmana. Mm. It's very much a Rama story. But on the other side, it sounds like quite a Protestantization of Hinduism, where you have preaching, you have a certain sort of paternal role, you have.
But there's also the thing in Hinduism of you going to the guru, and the guru just tells stories.
Mm.
And it's this sort of listening to the stories, and it's you know, how you interpret them within your life is up to you.
Mm.
So there is that thing of Amitabha, you know, and people just taking. I mean, I know a couple of his fans called Neil and Lakshmi. They're very sweet, and they live in Jaipur. And every time I go to Jaipur with Amitabha, I meet them. And the first time I met them, they were so amazed that I was doing a dissertation on him that they bought me a string of pearls to say thank you. And I was just like, I felt so unworthy. I was from a scruffy undergraduate trying to sort of write about masculinity in Amitabha's films, something ridiculous. And then obviously they haven't seen anything in writing. So then the last time I saw them, they were very suspicious. They're like, oh, I don't believe she's writing anything. I think she just wants to be near you. It's like, but they are like, you know, in the West, we're so suspicious of, like, you know, like a pure fan.
Mm.
We think that you're a bit unhinged and we'll put a restraining order on you or something. But these guys, they just sit, they're very neat and they're very sweet, and they will sit on set and they have everything he's ever, anything to do with Amitabha, and they get him to sign everything. And then they sit there and they kind of take bits of information, like he had to wear a vest for this thing he was doing. It was a really long vest, and there's that whole North Indian male thing about wearing a vest makes you a man and stuff, you know, have the sunny confidence and all that sort of thing. And so they were like looking at the vest and sort of whispering to each other about the vest, and it was sort of storing it in their brains, you know. So, but they said to me that, you know, he's the perfect man, you know, he's the perfect father, he's kind, he's the perfect husband, he's the perfect son, he's intelligent, he's dignified, he's, you know, all these different things, and he's basically the Sanskrit hero of, you know, everything that's the hero that's supposed to be in the Sanskrit epics. This is what Amitabha is, you know. He's young, he's handsome, he's educated, he's, I don't know how good he is at a bow and arrow, but you know that, you know, that whole thing. And they're really respectful, but they say that they think about what Amitabha would do if they have a life crisis. They don't worship him, but they think about his example in life. And I was interviewing him that day about something that happened in the day before. I'd been talking to him about his childhood, his school days at Sherwood, and he'd been, you know, telling me about when he first got interested in girls and all this sort of stuff, and he'd been really kind of and then they were on set, and he was like, started to tell me about, I said, you know, didn't you get the prize for being the pluckiest loser at one point in your life? And he said, yeah, he used to be able to get points for different things for your house. And, you know, he was Sherwood, so he was in Robin Hood house and everything. And one of the things you could get points for was, you know, if you entered the boxing match. And he, because he was so tall, would get put against people much older and bigger than him. So he would just stand in the ring and get the wrapping out of him just to gain a point for his house. So he got the prize for being the pluckiest loser. And then Pussy's two fans were there. He started to extrapolate away from that and say that when he'd been in politics and he'd had all this stuff being thrown at him, everyone had been telling him to stay within the party and to have the party help him fight these allegations and everything. But he remembered from his boxing days that actually when you're in the ring, it doesn't matter what anyone's screaming on the outside, you're the one who's going to have to take the punches and give the punches back. And so, he had this sort of boxing ring as life metaphor going. Mm-hmm. And I was getting more and more irritated because that's not what I wanted to talk about. But I looked around and these two women were sitting there going, and sort of, taking it in and being, all kind of grateful for this life lesson. And so I was like, oh, I'm so horrible. But, this is how he mm-hmm. he is in the mm-hmm. sort of Hindu thing, I think.
So as he gets older, he plays to it himself a bit. Mm-hmm. He quite enjoyed it, I understand.
Yeah, when he hated the first book I wrote about him. He's going to hate the second anymore. Mm-hmm. I went out to Bangkok in the summer to supposed to have the interviews. Finally, it's this big epic about him and the interviews, and I've basically gone mad in 5-star hotels around the world, 5-star ennui. So I was in a 5-star hotel in Bangkok this summer waiting for him, and it's very clever because what he did was he put me in basically put me in this room for a week with my 1.5-year-old, and by which time I got to talk to him. It was like if I didn't have to talk about Noddy, it was a pearl of wisdom. Anything he said was taken as kind of a gem. But anyway, and he said basically that now the Indian public, he said, you can write what you want. Mm-hmm. It's your point of view. You can write what you want. But I'm not sure that the Indian public will accept it anymore.
Mm.
That they don't want me. People aren't allowed to criticise me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That his brother had said he was going to expose him and bring him down and stuff, and they've had a financial falling out. But he said that the Indian public has turned against him. He said,
yeah.
"How ungrateful you are, younger brother, upstart."
Yeah.
So who knows?
It's a great. Often when I watch a lot of Bollywood films, it's a reminder of what it was like to be in a culture which had strong ideals.
Mm.
All the Western films at the moment, cue the Oscars, are very much about critique. They're still kind of having some sort of like critique of the American dream, etc. But India's still in a phase where it's exploring its ideals, which is very exciting in some ways.
And also it's playing to, the American films are playing to American audiences.
Yeah.
And they're playing to English audiences.
Mm-hmm.
But the Hindi films, there used to be in the distribution, you would have A, B, C, and Mosifal areas. It's a very sweet, sort of ancient use of the word Mosifal. And so you'd have kind of, nothing is computerised in the Hindi film collection. So you'd have A centres, which are the big cities, then the small towns, and then you get down to like a sheet and a wind up projector somewhere in the middle of Bihar. And now, the phrase apparently, which is being bantered around Bollywood, is "Who needs Bihar?" Which, because the only things that count, the only centres that count now that bring in the money are the cities, the multiplexes in the cities, and the diaspora, the audiences, the overseas audiences. And so it's very much what they want to see and how they want India to be portrayed.
Yeah, that's quite interesting.
I just got the impression some years ago that there was a distinction between Bollywood films and art films, such as Rai or something like that. But this is kind of a bit of both, really, isn't it? It's both art and
there's been a kind of real change. There was in the 60s, the government finally got it together and kind of set up a film school and an archive. Before then, nothing was archived, so there's just atrocious, lack of the, like the first film, Raja Harishchandra, doesn't exist anymore.
Really?
And and all and all another you know Falke's other films like this is a lovely one of the life of Krishna where his daughter played Krishna and he and there's you know, she's sitting on this, she's trying to defeat this big snake and she's sitting back beating the crap out of this big rump and that's all gone, it's all kind of just nothing gets after
they're just decaying
yeah nothing you know I mean it was just kind of throwaway, it's like a comic you know it was a throwaway or television when it first came out they set all this up and then there was a whole thing about funding. You could apply for funding for films that were going to fulfil some social criteria.
Mm.
So that's when we got the big, in the 60s, late 60s, early 70s, the big art scene started. But they had nowhere to show their films. Mm. They had no distribution, they had no cinemas. So it was just the festival circuit and overseas. Mm. So it had this kind of inflated importance in a way.
Yeah.
There was a couple of practitioners who managed to use private money, but was sort of, much more traditional format, so that's known as middle class now. Nowadays, there seems to be a shift again, especially now that they're playing to the educated audiences here and in India, much more so than Bihar. That they are doing much more intelligent films, and there's a lot of filmmakers who have come, who've gone to study film in the West, have come back, and are making films, which are much more interesting. So it's like third generation of filmmakers. So there's a shift again to doing sort of intelligent, but still within the Hindi format. So there's still songs and dances, and people feel quite passionate that they should keep them.
I think they're wonderful. I often feel as well that these films don't necessarily make it to the West. Mm. So, like Monsoon Wedding, makes it to the West, but
then she's a Western filmmaker.
Exactly, but not say Ashoka, which I was very fond of.
Ashoka, I hate
it. Oh, well, it's extremely silly, but it has lots and lots of Shah Rukh Khan, and it's also a kind of wacky historical.
Naked in mud. That's basically really good.
That's right. Yeah, it's very popular. But very art-looking film, very much a sort of a visually world art cinema kind of shot. But I feel like things like the Venice Film Festival and so on are slowly making the whole of world cinema. Like there are more and more.
Locarno is the big one.
Really?
Yeah, they screened Lagan and then they screened Swadesh and they screened Rangasanti and stuff.
It's kind of encouraging. I think the public at large don't see them, but it makes it sort of makes them happen, sort of like a magnet.
But Devdas and stuff was given much more global release. I think with stars like Aishwarya Rai coming over with doing the Bride and Prejudice, that allows them to. But also, you know, film distributors over here, it's my big bugbear, but they don't have to make any more money. They make a ton from the Desi audiences, so they're not going to get out of their ghetto mentality and approach the mainstream press. And also, because piracy is so terrible, they only have the print in the country the day before it's released. So you can't get proper reviews.
Mm.
Because there's no, you know...
Before, I don't want to run out of time, but I just want to ask about the early Amitabh, which I don't know as much about, of course. One of the first films I saw was Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gham, and you see the pictures, you know, he just stands there and all possible airs of authority accrue unto him. And that sort of continues through the film. But the early Amitabh, who is, A, of course, the rebel, the dark horse, and B, much more at sea. And that was an interesting clip, because he's very Shaivite. It seems to me all the films about family and romance...
Have Krishna.
Successful romance, have Krishna, Rama, and Sita, whereas Devdas, for instance, where it's a big tragedy and involves class issues, for instance, tend to have
sex,
Shiva or Kali.
Aggression. For example, in Aradhana, which is a 1960s film, they get married. They get married in a Shiva temple, and then they walk. She's just in a blanket because she got caught in a rainstorm, and they walk around this fire, and it's all very Shaivite and stuff. So sex and death is Shiva. But it's quite cool. Yeah. And Shiva's a very cool god for these sort of things. He understands. and then Krishna is the one who's the kind of romance.
Do you think the shouting Amitabh feeds into the modern Amitabh, or it's just...
Well, it's that thing of, like, don't mess.
Yeah.
You know, don't mess, because he's Amitabh Bachchan.
And he's been there. He has
been
that
there,
wisdom.
He's done that. He's done it in so many other ways that you can't even imagine.
Yeah.
It's like in DBC Dilwali Dulhania Le Jayenge. There's this very huge film in the mid-90s. And the guy who plays the father figure, Amjad Khan, had just previously, he was a villain, basically a villain, and so had played these, all these roles where he was feeding people to sharks and stuff. And there was this one famous role where he was Mugombo, and he kept saying Mugombo Hushiwa, which means Mugombo is happy, and then he would feed someone into the acid bath and things. I made him say it to me when I met him. I was like, oh. But then, you know, then he's dad, and it's like, you know, Shahrukh nicks some beer off him from his petrol station in Southall, and it's like, oh, don't, it's Mugombo, you know.
Yeah.
And, maybe I'm just being silly. But, so is that thing of, like, the, as you say, the accrued gravitas that is there. That's interesting.
Yeah, so he's a sort of dangerous figure, isn't he? I mean, was he always a baddie in those early films?
He's not a baddie, he's more like, sort of, he's more like the hurt young man. But he's often like the outcast and or the orphan, or the, you know, people don't understand him.
Yeah.
And at the end of the films, he's either he dies, bloody deaths in his mother's arms because, you know, he's done wrong, or he dies, but people see him for who he actually is rather than just a label.
Mm-hmm.
Like in Makadaka Sikanda, he is actually a really sweet guy who just loves this woman, but she just sees him as a street urchin, and then when he grows up, as this kind of hoodlum.
Mm.
And then on his deathbed, she finds out that it was him that was paying for her father's medicine and got him together with her now husband and all that sort of thing. So it's that thing of actually being seen as a whole person rather than the label of street people in India, or the orphan, or
I wonder sometimes whether that subversive character is still there in Hindi film very much. In some ways, like I think of Mahabatain and Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gham, where in a sense Shah Rukh Khan, the son, is a little bit the rebel.
But
and
isn't there any dirt?
No,
I mean,
it's not very.
I'm just kind of, you know, I was watching To Your Kid, and I was watching a lot of the early Disney cartoons, because if he's going to watch cartoons, I'm a big fascist about cartoons and make him watch good cartoons. But the early Disney cartoons, everyone has patched clothing, and their houses are scruffy, and their cars are falling apart.
Yeah.
And you know, like this is kind of okay. So it's the 30s in America, 30s and 40s. But you know, there's this real kind of sense that people weren't smart. Whereas you look at cartoons now, and everyone is kind of, you know.
Yeah.
Really, there's never going to be, you know, Nemo isn't going to be found having a sort of patched fin or something, is he? You know, so it's that whole thing of, and it's the same in Hindi films, is that nobody, you know, like in Raj Kapoor films in the 50s, 40s and 50s, he was a street kid, you know, he was a street urchin, and, you know, he would look at his holy shoes and he'd say, Chilo Chappal, let's go, and off he'd go on another walk, and, you know, he had songs about the pavement is a place where everyone can live and stuff. I mean, it was. And now, Shahrukh's the outsider, but he still has Dolce & Gabbana.
Absolutely.
He's still branded up with eyeballs.
Right. Yeah, often in the films that you feel like Amitabh won his tapas by being this wild, strong, angry, you know, Rajas-filled young man, whereas Shahrukh Khan won his power by being born of a wealthy family. It's very, it's the whole socially, it's a whole different.
But it's also that thing of, like, with I think there's been a real, you know, like before Amitabh there was the chocolate box heroes, and they were all boys basically, and then Amitabh came along, and Amitabh and Shashi and stuff were all very much adult men. And you know, and you know, like in Diwa, Amitabh is seen having a post-coital cigarette in satin sheets with a prostitute, you know, and that kind of thing. It's like and now they've all gone back to being boys.
Frankly,
it's just sort of older.
Yeah.
But you know, like Amir Khan and Shahrukh Khan and Hrithik Roshan and stuff were all boys.
Were they ever explicitly political? Like we're starting to have more and more sort of explicitly political films happening, whereas for a while it's been kind of like ideology, conservative ideology or whatever reflected. In Amitabh's period, I guess in sort of 60s, 70s, Were the political messages that went along with
his
social...
Yeah, well, I think the Angry Young Man stuff really played on the fact that India was, you know, 74 was just massive social unrest and strikes and everyone, you know, suddenly realising that the Nehruvian dream of post-independence religion in India was not going to really work. There was this massive period of social unrest, and that Angry Young Man persona really tapped into that and kind of personified it. And people who felt alienated from their fellow, you know, their fellow countrymen actually really focused on him and understood him. Trishul and Kalapata and stuff, the Angry Young Man trilogy. So yeah, I definitely think that was there.
I'm going to pull us to an end shortly, but I really want to see, what was the name of the one, the Shouting at Shiva film?
Diva, do you want to borrow it?
Yeah, actually. That's interesting. I'm always interested in explicit images of puja and darshan in films, and that's an amazing one.
Well, maybe you know Amarok Brantani.
Yeah, not very well, though.
Amarok Brantani has the amazing Sai Baba scene where the blobs of light come out of his eyes and go to the mother.
That's right.
And she regains her sight.
That's right.
And the baddies are stopped from going into the temple. And he's a Muslim guy singing a bhajan.
Yeah.
And the baddies are stopped from going into the temple by a snake. Suddenly comes up.
Wow.
Gets all, it's all numbed on.
Wow. I'm so used to seeing the lover characters sing to Radha and Krishna. I'd love to sort of collect a library of this very different sort of thing you get with the...
There's also the comedy. There's the comic guru. The guru is in Shan. There's a great scene where they're all con men and women in Shan, and they con loads of people out of cash by pretending to be like this sort of dancing gurus, and that they're about to walk on water, and everyone gets into this big frantic thing, and then starts throwing the money, and then they just scrap up the money and run away.
That's amazing. I can think of many more questions which I'll ask separately, but thank you.
You're welcome.
All the films and I'll watch them. And that concludes our religion and film. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.